Coming up on KUCB News, Unalaska's city manager resigns and a school in the Pribilof Islands closes its doors. Stay tuned.
Local News is sponsored by Alpha Welding and Boat Repair Incorporated, providing boat repairs and conversions in Unalaska Dutch Harbor for the last 25 years. Our professionals are trained to use heavy-duty equipment, including boom trucks, shears, brakes, a water jet cutting machine, and a punch machine. Our fully equipped metal fabrication welding shop and machine shop are located at 1149 East Broadway. Alpha Welding and Boat Repair can be reached at 581-1785 or 581-2666.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Zoe Sobel with some local news on Monday, September 11th, 2017. Come October, the city of Unalaska will need a new city manager. Current city manager Dave Martinson has tendered his resignation and accepted the terms of his amended contract Friday. The deal proposed by Unalaska's City Council will give Martinson nearly $30,000 in severance and moving expenses, plus 2 weeks of free rent in his current city home. His last day on the job is September 29th. While students head back to class across Alaska, the school on St. George Island has stayed closed. District officials say it's the latest casualty in a statewide trend where small, rural communities struggle to hold on to their kids. KUCB's Laura Craigle reports.
Alaska schools need at least 10 students to receive funding from the state, and after years of close calls, the St. George School has finally missed that mark. Brett Agenbrod is superintendent of the Pribilof Island School District.
While there were 10 students physically in St. George during the count period, the state has taken issue with those numbers, and so they altered our count to 6 students.
State officials say St. George was inflating its numbers by bringing over students from St. Paul Island just for the 4-week period that determines funding. Their decision to change the count meant deep cuts to the district budget and forced the St. George School to shut down. Agenbrod says the closure has been sad and unsettling for the island community of about 50 people, but without full funding, they couldn't afford to keep it open.
There's no way to get around that.
Now the district is offering a supported correspondence program. Agenbrod says the 6 remaining students are allowed to gather at the school building every morning for 4 hours. They work on their lessons with help from a former substitute teacher. While that provides some structure for the kids, he says it doesn't solve the shrinking enrollment that started about 10 years ago.
The district was going strong, a couple hundred kids district-wide, proportionally in St. George and St. Paul, and then there was like a tipping point.
He says some families sent their kids to boarding school, others just moved away, including 17-year-old Kobe Lakanoffs.
Well, my mom got pregnant. That was one of the big reasons. Plus, the economy out there wasn't going so well.
Lakanoff's family left St. George in 2010, but even if they hadn't moved, he says he probably wouldn't have gone to high school on the island.
It just doesn't have as much stuff as Mount Edgecombe does.
Like activities and clubs
and
stuff?
Yeah, like, what's the word? Opportunity, I guess.
Going to school in Anchorage has introduced him to new opportunities, but Lakanoff says leaving St. George has had drawbacks too. The island school offered cultural lessons he can't get anywhere else.
One of my fondest memories was like Aleut class. It was like when they taught us Aleut. I used to be able to speak it fluently back then.
Lakanoff has since lost the language, and he's afraid he may lose his hometown too. In rural Alaska, school closures have shut down several communities, from King Island in the 1970s to Portage Creek in the mid-2000s. Now, Lakanoff and the superintendent say it's unclear if St. George will survive without its school. In St. George, I'm Laura Craigle.
St. George isn't the only community in the Aleutian and Pribilof Islands struggling with low enrollment. The schools in Accutan, Atka, and Adak are also close to the state cutoff, with just 10 to 15 students each. The Alaska Supreme Court affirmed last week that Alaska Native tribes have sovereign immunity from state courts. The ruling upheld a lower court's decision involving a legal fight between 2 Juneau-based tribal governments over unspent federal funds. The Douglas Indian Association claimed it was owed its share of federal transportation money after it left a tribal consortium set up by the Central Council Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska. In 2015, it filed state lawsuits seeking about $1 million from unspent federal funds from the 7 years it was part of the consortium. Judge Louise Menendez rejected Douglas Indian Association's lawsuit in January, affirming that Central Council and two of its top officials named in the suit had sovereign immunity because of the tribe's federally recognized status. Douglas Indian Association filed an appeal with the Alaska Supreme Court this year, arguing the state's standard is different than the federal rules. The Supreme Court disagreed, which settles the question of sovereign immunity for tribes and tribal officials in state court. The case had attracted the attention of other Alaska Native tribes because it tested sovereign immunity for tribes. Former Alaska Natural Resources Commissioner Joe Balash is in line for a big job at the U.S. Interior Department. If confirmed by the Senate, he'll be Assistant Secretary for Land and Minerals Management. He would oversee a wide swath of interior, including the Bureau of Land Management and the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management. At his confirmation hearing last week, Balash said his perspective on resource extraction formed early and was shaped by his love of salmon. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin has more.
Balash now works as Senator Dan Sullivan's chief of staff in Washington. He grew up in an Air Force family and told senators that, as a child in the 1980s, he saw the decline of the steel industry in Pittsburgh, where he'd go to visit his grandfather.
At the time, he used to curse the EPA for shutting down the mills that employed him and his brother Teamsters. At the time, I concluded the only choice we had was either good jobs or a clean environment.
Then his dad transferred to Eielson Air Force Base, and the family moved to North Pole. Balash says he spent his early teens fishing for salmon wherever the family's Subaru could go. He says learning about the life cycle of the salmon gave him a greater appreciation of clean water.
And at the same time, I began to learn about the Permanent Fund Dividend Program and where our state's wealth came from.
The moral of his story? Balash says you can have both, responsible development and clean air and water. He says he's a consensus builder, a guy who likes to bring all sides to the table. He says he's fully committed to listening to people affected by the department's decisions and really taking what they say into account.
I believe that you get much further when people come to an understanding jointly, collaboratively, by first understanding the problems that each other has and then identify solutions together.
Mr. Balash may have trouble basically fulfilling some of the ideals that he talked about today.
Lois Epstein, Arctic Director for the Wilderness Society, says an August 31 order from the Interior Secretary could undercut Balash's good intentions. The order establishes a 300-page limit for environmental impact statements on complex projects the Interior Department considers. It also says the reports should be completed within a year. Epstein says that's likely to mean excluding information.
And the public process is incredibly important, and sometimes it takes a long time to schedule. There are hunting seasons for subsistence hunters that have to be taken into account, as well as the fact that some of the projects in Alaska are just enormous.
The new limits are not ironclad. According to the directive, reports can be longer and take more time with the approval of an Assistant Secretary of the Interior. Assistant Secretary, that's the job Joe Balash would hold, if he's confirmed. Senator Lisa Murkowski says she expects her Energy and Natural Resources Committee will approve Balash soon, sending his nomination to the full Senate. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Zoe Sobel. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org. Please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecast.